Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Janice M., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, March the 7th, 2016. Today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're in chapter More About Alcoholism on page 41. We'll be beginning the reading on the last paragraph on 41, and we'll read another paragraph, the first paragraph on page 42, and comment on that paragraph. Today's readers are for the 12 Steps, Nancy J., the 12 Traditions, and Marie M. Our readers for the text are Mary K.W., Santa H., and Du L. The reference number for yesterday, Sunday, our special edition on fear, which was March 7th, 2015, the share ID number is 8512. That's 8512. And that was a focused presentation by Larry Kay of Chicago entitled Fear, the Evil Corroding Thread. OA Preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Nancy J. to please read the 12 steps. Star 1 to unmute.
Good morning. This is Nancy J., grateful compulsive overeater from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our life, to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except where to do so would harm them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening, as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to compulsive overeaters, and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Nancy J. I will now ask Anne Marie M. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Janice, and thank you for your service. This is Anne Marie M., compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself through our conscious contact, through our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinions on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
And thank you, Anne Marie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that you sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Okay. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 41. Our first reader will read the last paragraph on that page for context, and then we will focus our shares on the first paragraph on page 42. So I will now ask Mary K. W. to begin reading, please.
Good morning, Janice. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you for everyone in line. My name is Mary K. W. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater just for today. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that I had an alcoholic mind. The time and the place would come. I would drink again. They said that although I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen, and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help those in those strange mental blank spot. I had never been able to understand people who said that the problem had been hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much, and then asked me if I thought myself alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. I had to concede both propositions. They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality, such as I had exhibited in Washington, was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. He's really getting beaten down here, and it is important for me to remember that it takes being totally defeated. Even at the beginning of this paragraph that we're commenting on today, when they grinned at him, he didn't like it. So even though in the paragraph before, he knew he was down and he was beginning to understand, but one last time when they walked in, he didn't like them it so much because they grinned as if they knew something that he didn't know. And right then it was like he wanted to take it back almost. He didn't something made him uneasy. But then as he listened to their stories, and I think that that's what's important is that that's what talks to me is that we just tell our stories. And as we tell our stories, when they're ready, when their higher power is ready for them to be ready, that they'll get something out of it. I'm going to end with that and let other people comment. Thank you. And I pass.
And thank you, Mary K.W. Okay, who would like to comment?
Chrissy M.
Approximately 3 minutes on what was read. Okay, I hear Chrissy M. Yeah.
Nessa R.
Next.
Melissa
C. Anyone else?
Kim G.
Okay, one more for this group. No? We'll go with that then. Okay, Chrissy M., you're up.
Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm a recovered compulsive eater and overeater and anorexic from New Jersey. I had to jump in on this. This is really that moment when the best and the worst moment for any addict to be able to concede to your innermost self that's it, the jig is up. I have written underlined here the alcoholic mentality. And the alcoholic mentality, just to me, the way I've come to understand it, is the addict mind, the one that fights to continue to live in the addiction with the justification and the distortion of reality that you need to live in order to continue to do something because it's death to us to continue to do it, but we need to our whole lives become fixated around keeping up the facade that we're fine. And I love that it says this process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction. That is so important to me that the two members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see him and helped him through the process to snuff out the last flicker of conviction. It's so important. It's absolutely so important. I'm going through something with my son right now where he's 18, he's going to meetings, he's stopping drinking but thinks that maybe pot's okay. And it's so interesting because without forcing the situation, just helping another addict to bring into the light their thought process is so revealing to them because we can't do that on our own. To say, oh, well, listen, if you spend all your money on that, do you think that that's unmanageability? Yeah, that's true. So and we can't do that on our own. So we have to try so much. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chrissy. Can you go ahead?
Hi, good morning. My name is Nessa R., and I'm recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. I, too, want to comment on the last sentence we read. This process snapped out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself, because this is such a key to step one, and this is such a key to abstinence. Of course, abstinence is not the goal, but it is the beginning to the process of recovery. There's this weight loss program for men here in Toronto that uses a slogan that I love, that I think it should be always. It says, if you could have done it alone, you would have done it already. And this is true for me, because even in programs, I tried so many things to, and I guess the pun is intended, to have my cake and eat it too. And of course, nothing worked. Nothing worked. As long as I was looking for that sense of ease and comfort in the food, no matter what the food was, even if it wasn't sugar and flour, nothing could really happen for me. You know, no recovery could ensue. You know, I could pretend that I was abstinent because I wasn't having sugar and flour, but if I'm holding on to any kind of food that is giving me that sense of ease and comfort, then of course, I still believe I can do the job myself. I still believe that I have some power. And if I believe that I have some power and I can control, you know, the gray foods or whatever, then I don't need God. And if I don't need God, then I don't need to make a decision. If I don't need to make a decision, I don't do the action steps. And if I don't do the action steps, I don't recover. So it's as simple as that. I mean, there has to be no glimmer of hope whatsoever. I have to be 100% honest about the foods. Once I put down, I would say, the staples of a compulsive overeater, I got to be vigilant because other foods will try to move in. And for me, they have moved in. You know, innocuous things like cherries and nuts and dried fruit, you know, like I got to be very honest and say, you know, I really cannot have these anymore because they just keep the door open a crack, and a crack is all that the disease needs. So I just really got to keep this in mind that I cannot do this job myself. And so when a food gets exciting and when it starts moving into the mental obsession, I got to call my sponsor and say, you know, this food's got to go. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Nessa R. Okay, Melissa C., it is your turn. Melissa C.? Star 1 to unmute. Can you hear
me? Hi, good morning. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I was having a problem with my phone. It's Melissa C., a recovered compulsive overeater in New York. And, yeah, I'm thinking about their grin, you know, that they had on their face because, and how annoying that grin was to me as well when I was really beaten down. But the grin is, you know, and I know it's the grin that I give people now when they're beaten down by it because, you know, this desperation that we're finally driven to is exactly where it all begins. And so, you know, when somebody calls me in tears or texts me and says, this is it, I've done, I've had it, I can't do this on my own, yeah, I'm smiling because I'm hopeful that maybe this is the beginning for them. And, you know, and that I know for myself, I could never do this on my own, although I kept trying, even in OA, you know, even in and out of the rooms, there was still this weird glimmer, this thought that I could somehow still maintain myself, you know, I could still kind of hang on to a little self-reliance and that I wouldn't let go 100%. And so I had that, I think that crushing blow in measured doses over and over and over again until it finally was it, you know. And for me, the great aha moment was it wasn't even the weight anymore. I wasn't even at my highest weight. And I wasn't even eating sugar at that point. But the disease had me down. And, you know, I, for me, my real moment of desperation, I was in a home, you know, a home repair shop with my husband in Lowe's on a whim. You know, we were going to look for stuff for the bathroom, and I hadn't been going to my meetings, and I had been putting on weight, but it wasn't the weight, it was my thinking, and I saw somebody that I knew from the fellowship there, and instead of running down the next aisle and hide, I went over to her, and she had a grin on her face, and she, you know, she gave me a hug, and she put her phone number in my hand, and, you know, and I could feel her hand holding mine, and I felt, okay, I'm not supposed to be doing this alone. And that's been the great awakening for me. I could never do this alone because I'm not meant to do this alone. And thank you. Glad to know that today. With that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Melissa C. Okay, before Kim G. Steps up, just a gentle reminder again to please keep our phones muted. I thought I heard somebody chopping. Okay, Kim G., it is your turn.
Good morning, Janice. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. If I thought myself an alcoholic, and if I were really licked this time, you know, I love the word if. The word if is a condition. So as we're wrapping up step one, these are questions we need to ask ourselves because, you know, I really thought being a compulsive overeater was about my food and my weight. And I defined my compulsive overeating by the consequences of my overeating, how overweight I was, how many times I threw up, all those different things. But do I really understand and believe myself to be an alcoholic, a compulsive overeater of the type they describe in this book? Do I believe I have the allergy? Do I believe there's certain foods that once I ingest them, regardless of the reason I ingest them, that I have a phenomenon of craving, that I am not like other people, that I am a distinct entity? Well, am I still thinking, yeah, you guys might need to do that. But, you know, I can moderate. You know, I can use these yellow foods or these gray foods. If I, you know, I'm not eating X and Y, but if I have 5 bananas, that's okay. You know, if I eat 2 pounds of a starch, but that's okay because it's not, you know, my heroin. I'm just smoking pot, like it was said earlier. You know, if I'm trying to control it, it's a problem. It's a problem. So do I believe I have the allergy described in this book? And secondly, do I believe I have the mental part? Am I able to get abstinent and happy? That was a big thing. I could get abstinent for periods of time, but I couldn't be abstinent and happy. Did I believe that I, you know, was I the victim of a delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I managed well? But this mental obsession was simply going to be enough for me to just do the tools and have a support group. Do I believe that if I had the world look a certain way, I'm going to be okay? Because I don't know about you, I thought I was an emotional eater. But the fact was, I ate when I was happy. I ate when I was sad. I ate when I was angry. I ate in a good relationship. I ate in a bad relationship. Jim and Fred and these other two stories tell me I cannot arrange my life in such a way that I am not going to want to eat. So do I believe I'm an alcoholic of that type? And the second part is if I am licked for good. The big book doesn't ask us if we're willing to put the food down one day at a time. My thing is, well, when I lose 30 pounds, if I'm abstinent for 90 days, when I get to this wedding, then I can go back and I can moderate. The big book is asking us, are we licked this time? And what does that look like? And I'm going to finish with this on page 151. This is what it looks like for me, and the book describes. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. Execs, problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to have a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life with or without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Kim G. Okay, who else would like to comment on what was read for approximately 3 minutes?
Vasa O.
Duell.
Maria
B.
Vasa O. Wait a minute. No, Duell. And who else?
Maria B.
Nadia, yes. Nadia B. Anyone else? Vasa O. Duell. Nadia B. Sue G. Anyone else? All right, let's go with those four. Vasa, oh, it is your turn. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Janice, thank you for your service. And I am grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater calling from Florida. By the time I came to my first OA meeting, I was so bitten with the disease. I remember saying, "This, I'm just going to die." I had given, 100%. I had given up to that point, maybe half a year or so. I remember saying, well, maybe this is going to work or maybe that's going to work, and nothing. And I remember saying, well, I'm just going to eat because there's nothing I can do. I'm going to eat and be miserable, and I'll die, you know. It was very scary. I felt very afraid, terrified, because I had seen family members suffer from this disease and with all kinds of physical problems and death, you know, heart problems, diabetes, all kinds of problems. And I was the beginning. It was the beginning. I was 41 years old when I came to this program, and I was beginning to develop those symptoms, you know. And I just thank God every single day. Thank you for bringing me to my first OA meeting. And I remember I did get my abstinence right from the beginning because I was terrified. I took it very, very seriously. And I did step one, two, and three at the same time, but I could not imagine living life with those certain alcoholic foods. I couldn't remember living for the rest of my life without them. And I remember my sponsor would say, just for today. It was torture. It was torture. I was a grazer. I'd start in the morning and not finish at nighttime. Like, even if I went to sleep at nighttime, get up at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, I'd check the refrigerator. And it was getting so progressive. So, as I said, she said, just do this one day at a time, one meal at a time, and not to have anything, not to put anything in my mouth between breakfast and lunch, or lunch and supper, or supper after that. You know, it was just horrible, you know. But I kept on asking God for help. Get on my knees, please, God, help me get through this. Kept on going to my programs, picked up the tools, you know, and that's what got me at the beginning, and it became like a way of life today, you know. Again, as long as I don't run to those alcoholic foods, then I don't trigger the allergy, and I don't have that mental obsession. Even if I do, it's okay. It's okay for Vasa to think of, you can think about it, but don't act on it. So thank you, and I pass.
And thank you, Vasa. Oh, and everyone stay into the three-minute limit. Yes, Duell, it is your turn.
Good morning. This is Duell, recovered compulsive overeater from New York. Thank you very much, Janice. Yeah, I see here that Fred is taking his first step. You know, he's feeling hopelessly defeated, and he realizes he's powerless, and he doesn't understand it all because he's been playing around. You know, he's been abstinent, and then he goes back into the drink, and he gets, you know, sober, and then he goes back into the drink. And then finally, you know, at this point in time, he's hitting bottom. He's just like, he can't do it anymore. And he realizes his powerlessness. Again, he doesn't understand it all, but he knew that others had recovered and they stay sober, and he wants to find out more from them. And as he's going through this process, we see that there are two members here of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're grinning. And he doesn't like that, right? Because he's realizing he's cornered at last. He has his proposition. You know, he either goes towards the solution, which he's kind of like known all along, or he continues with the problem, and he continues to progressively go down. And then he says, they piled up on me heaps of evidence to the effect that the alcoholic mentality such as existed was a hopeless condition. And, you know, and the reason why they can do this is what page 18 says, that the ex-problem drinker who has found a solution is properly armed with facts about himself and generally can win the entire confidence of another in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So two things are going on here. One, the alcoholic or compulsive overeater needs to be armed with facts about himself, right? Experience, strength, and hope. But most important, what's found in these pages, you know, the experience from these pages, the experience of the collective 100 men and women who have recovered, you know, they found a solution, they found a way out, and that's what they're conveying to this, to Fred, you know, is that there is a way out. And if you follow the recipe, you follow the instructions, the clear-cut instructions that are found in this book, then he has a way out of his malady, you know, the hopeless condition. And then it says, when he went through this process, the last flicker was snuffed out. You know, he had to make a decision. Do I go towards recovery or do I continue to go towards my disease? And he chose to go towards recovery. He chose to follow the instructions in this book. And we're going to see how that changed him and how it helped him to finally stay sober, to finally stay at a place where he couldn't do it before. And the solutions here in these pages. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Duell. Nadia B., it is your turn.
Good morning, Janice. Thank you so much for your service. This is Nadia B., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Connecticut. And I love Fred today. You know, Fred, I, you know, stepped into Fred's footsteps through my recovery and also in my, you know, I still remember this day when I realized that my condition was hopeless. It was, you know, after I've decided to fire yet another sponsor and, you know, decided to try this on my own. And, you know, I remember the day when, you know, for about 2 weeks, everything went fine and I was able to control my weight with binging on low-calorie foods and exercising. And, you know, all went well. And one day I went to feed my neighbor's cats as they went on the trip, and they had all this food that I didn't have in the house. And, you know, somehow I ended up eating them all. And, you know, I thought, well, not a big deal, you know. And the next day, you know, I thought everything would be fine. And, of course, nothing was fine the next day and the next day and the next day. And, you know, one day someone called me from program to ask me how I was doing. And I finally realized that I was not doing so well. And, you know, as she was speaking, the evidence hit me. And I started sobbing on the phone. And, you know, by the end of that conversation, I realized that I could not do the job myself and that I was cornered at last. I finally could understand, you know, that who I am. And, you know, after listening to all of you guys speaking, I finally realized that I was one off and I was not an exception. And, you know, because I was one off, and I was a true compulsive overeater, I couldn't do the job myself. And, you know, that was my gift of hopelessness and hope. And, you know, if you are as hopeless as I was, this program is for you, I think, as well as it was for me, and it saved my life. So thank God for the day of hopelessness, and thank God for this book and for all of you guys. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
And thank you to you, Nadia B. Okay, Sue G., it is your turn.
Thanks. Good morning. This is Sue G. from Michigan. And I remember I came in a long time ago into OA. Definition then was overeating and didn't have anything else added on to it. And I remember when they changed it to compulsive overeating, I started thinking the word compulsive. And I used to think it was so unfair because they added on eating behaviors and leading, moving toward a healthy weight. And I thought, well, I was just working on this abstinence thing and just not overeating, and had to rethink everything. And I thought, well, alcoholics don't have to go through that, but they do. They have drinking behaviors. There are places sometimes that they can't go when they're first a little baby coming in, and there are things they have to avoid. There are so many things. I remember I had to avoid certain lines. Now I'm getting stronger in the grocery store, but I'm getting stronger where I can go down those lines, those aisles, and not have it bother me. But it's not for me. It's not enough just to not be compulsive eating or overeating, but it's those food behaviors. It's where do I eat? When do I eat? Those are my behaviors that to be absent, I have to have those also under control. And I have to concede that, that I'm not there yet. And I'm still learning. I'm still learning what they are. And I know this is probably a little confusing to some people, but I have to, every time I read where we read and we talk about compulsive overeating, I always go, and food behaviors, and is my weight moving toward a healthy lifestyle? And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Suji. Okay, would anyone else like to comment on what was read? All right. If not, we can go on to paragraph 2, and Santa H., would you please read?
Hi, good morning, family. My name is Santa H., Santa with an O, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, calling in from New Jersey. Then they outlined the spiritual answer and program of action, which hundreds of them had followed successfully. Though I had been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. But the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. Admit I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be. Wow. I'm grateful to be sharing on this paragraph, and I'm grateful to be back on this meeting. I'm grateful to be home, and grateful for everybody who shared this morning, and it resonated with me quite in many ways. I also, like Fred, I identify here so closely to Fred's story because my experience with this paragraph is I am grateful that I came into OA where I was able to see all the view where the problem had been solved. And I had my own spiritual foundation, and I didn't come here for that. I came here because I wanted to lose 100 pounds, and that is it. But what this program has taught me is that that I had to look at this whole concept of why I was eating from a whole new different perspective. And that's what the gift this program had given me. And I had to learn from my experience that food was just a symptom, and that losing weight would not solve my problems. And I really thought that once I lost all that weight, my problems would go away. Well, surprise, it didn't. And so my path was not a straight path. I mean, I came in, it was easy, put down the sugar and flour. But like Kim C shared so eloquently, I was still controlling one ingredient in my diet. And for me, that was nuts because I did not want to give up my vegan lifestyle. But I had to throw that lifelong conception out the window. Although that was the way I ate as a child, it wasn't the way that my higher power wanted me to continue going forward. So I had to go through the steps not once, but twice, and I went through it abstinently. At that point in time, it was easy for me to throw away lifelong conception out the window because as I was going through the process, I began to see how, wow, I'm experiencing this. I'm experiencing what these people are saying in this book. I'm experiencing what you all are reading and sharing day in and day out in this meeting. Although I'm hearing them saying, yeah, but I'm so grateful that I have reached a point where I have thrown away many tribal thinking and I have picked up a new conception that my higher power has granted me that works for me. And I continue to grow and evolve. Have I gotten rid of all my lifelong conception? No, I am not that arrogant to say I have. I still continue to walk in humility and ask my higher power to keep me with an open mind so that I can be humble enough to continue to come on this meeting and listen and learn something new because I don't know it all. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Santa H. Okay, who would like to comment on this paragraph?
Charles H.
Rita M.
Okay, we're all waiting. Charles H., I heard. And whom else?
Sally.
Martha.
Sally. Leah M.
Reba P.
Sally A. I hear Leah M. I hear Reba P. Whom else?
Renata.
And Renata. Let's go with that for now. Okay, Charles H., you're up.
Thank you, Janice, for your service. Y'all got to time this thing right so y'all can get in. I'm just going. Good morning. Love Monday mornings now, man. What a transformation. Outline the program of action. Although, you know, I don't think he said drastic proposal like they said in Bill's story, but drastic like a father lion kicking out the adolescent son. Yeah. Drastic like two male lions still in the cup to take over. Yeah, that drastic. I love what Laurie C. says. You know, I don't want my sponsors calling me, talking about my cat and my husband and my boyfriend. No, put it in the fourth step. Outline the program of action. Don't be calling me with all that whining, right? You know, don't be calling me with all that 98% sharing in the OA meetings, right? Like, let's go out into the world and be that big book. Not that we're forcing it down there, but they're not talking about step work. That's why they – I don't wonder why I'm in the food. I wonder why I'm in the food, because I'm not outlining a program of action. I need to outline that program of action, follow it every day. I am not – if I don't have a 10-step every day, then I'm perfect. Outline every day the program of action, right? Action. It takes action to put that food down. It takes action to keep that food down. You can pray to God all you want, right? But he ain't going to force you to put it down. Outline the program of action. Yeah, it's drastic. It's drastic, just like those two examples that I gave. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
And thank you, Charles H. Okay, Sally A., it is your turn.
Good morning, A Vision for You. Good morning again, Janice. It's Sally A. in New York, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks for letting me share. There's so much here, but I just love that we really are having sort of a small lesson in bringing the message to other people, and we see it in these two paragraphs. We saw it in that upper paragraph where they grinned, he didn't like it so much, and they asked him two important questions. Do you believe, do you concede to your innermost self, which is step one, page 30 tells us this, do you concede to your innermost self that you are in our case, a food addict or a compulsive overeater? And number two, are you licked? Are you done? Those are the two questions I see them asking here. Do you concede to your innermost self that you really are an alcoholic, and are you done? Because there's no sense in talking to you if you're not those two things, if you don't know that much. And then coming down, we see in this next paragraph, though I had been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow, but the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. Sheesh. I mean, it's not like you're asking me just to, like, go on a diet. You're not just telling me that, you know, my Weight Watchers plan of eating 25 points of ice cream a day isn't working, so I'll do something different. It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out of the window. And by the way, that's the set-aside prayer from the get-go. We set aside what we think we knew about this, that, and the other thing. It meant I would have to throw away several lifelong conceptions out the window. That was not easy, but the moment I made up my mind, and this is where I want to just settle. Oh, I didn't turn on my timer, Janice, so I'm waiting for you to tell me time. I made up my mind to go through with the process. I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be, because what I see in those words is surrender. The moment I surrendered, the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had the curious feeling, my condition was relieved, as in fact, it proved to be. Thanks for letting me share with that, our past.
Just on time, Sally A., thank you. Leah M., you're up.
Thanks so much. So much in this paragraph. Thank you. Then they outlined the spiritual answer and program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. I mean, you know, those that had blazed this trail came forward with a message of depth and weight. These men and women had recovered, and the problem had been solved, and they were able to transmit something because they had something to transmit. They had had a spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery, and now they were able to carry that message because they could teach what they knew. You know, you can't lead where you don't go, and you can't be what you're not, and you can't give what you ain't got. And they were able to give because they had something to give. However, you know, being on the other side of that table, you know, I had to get beaten to a pulp to admit this powerlessness, because if I kept thinking that I had the power, then it was going to block off anything else that could help me. If I didn't need power greater than myself, you know, then there was no urgency, no necessity for these steps. The Big Book taught me that alcohol, that food for my condition, was just a symptom of the problem. I knew everything there was about compulsive overeating. I had sat in the rooms for 5 years daily. I had a wide variety of experience with active compulsive overeating and its progression. What I didn't know about prior to January of 1987 is how does Leia live in Leia without having to binge her brains out in order to stand it? I did not know that. Neither did I know that freedom wasn't going to be free. Freedom wasn't going to be free. There was a price to be paid, because more than my compulsive overeating had to be arrested. My own conceptions, my own philosophy, my ideas, my beliefs, my attitudes had to be confronted and overhauled. That was the necessity and the importance of the step process, because this is going to be far more than just the mere elimination of my binge foods. This was going to be about a restored life, a renewed life, a rehabilitated life. And the steps were designed to cause that spiritual awakening, that personality change in me, and that's exactly what occurred. And that's what we're all here about, those who have recovered. This is about, you know, the raising of the dead. How do you explain being totally enslaved by compulsive overeating as I was, and yet I was able to, as a result of these steps, rise up out of a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body? That has been my experience. And now I come to say you too can engage in this process, and having had a spiritual awakening and being restored to sanity, you too can lead someone down that path. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Leah M. Okay, Reva P., we have five more minutes, so if we could take 2.5 minutes apiece, it would be great. Reva P., and then followed by Renata. Please go ahead, Reva.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. I wanted to touch on a few points, and I have my timer. First of all, the word then, which reminds me, they outlined the program of action after this Fred reached his step one. So I can talk and talk and talk about program, but until the person I'm working with has reached their bottom, it's not going to be very effective. Second, they outlined a program of action. They didn't outline a program of analysis or a program of thinking. And this program is all about taking the action, taking the steps. Third, it's drastic, which reminds me it's simple but so not easy, because the major point is changing my lifelong conceptions. And I didn't know how many lies I believed in. I didn't know how twisted my thinking was, not just about the food, but about life, about people, places, things. And the only way I learned that and saw in black and white what my old false beliefs were was by making the decision. He said he made up his mind this time. Making up his mind is about taking step three and going through with the rest of the steps. And once I take the steps and do 4 to 9 and see what my old thinking is and how it's wrong and not serving me, then I can begin to live the recovered life, which is constantly remembering, as I did this morning, when I thought, I got the plan for my clients, I know what I'm doing today. That already is dangerous because I don't know. I need to keep asking and asking and pausing. As soon as I think I can roll up my sleeves and I'm good to go, whether it's food or anything, anything in my life, then I'm in trouble. And it's constantly changing my thinking, changing my beliefs. What do you think, God? What is your opinion of what is right action and right thought? And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Reva P. Okay, Renata, it is your turn.
Hi, Janice. Good morning. Thank you for your service. Good morning, family. This is Renata G., recovered compulsive reader in New York. Yeah, this is a very powerful paragraph. It says, then they outlined the spiritual answer in the program of action, which hundreds of them had followed successfully. So, you know, the spiritual answer, right? Step two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. But if I don't think I'm insane, then I don't need the spiritual answer. So, you know, like everyone else shared before, I need to have really taken step one to go through with the process. Otherwise, I'll never submit myself to this. You know, and for me, you know, insanity didn't mean that I had to weigh 500 pounds or that I didn't have any friends or I never got out of the house. But my life was completely unmanageable. You know, every waking moment, I was thinking about food. I remember this one time I was in a clothing store, and all I could think about was the chocolates they have up front by the cashier. And then I realized, there's something wrong with my thinking. This is not even a food store. Or, you know, getting up in the morning, getting dressed for work, and, you know, that was a torture right there. I didn't want to live that way anymore, you know, in bondage, in prison. Not allowing myself to participate or enjoy anything in life because this disease took over my thinking constantly. And so I had to admit that I needed help because on my own, everything I've tried my entire life did not work. And so, you know, this program showed me the program of action, you know, what I needed to do in order to establish a relationship with power. You know, and it talks about how he was a churchman and all of that. Like, I used to go to church in the past. And today when I hear some, you know, whatever pastors or people from religion speak,
they talk about the things that we do through this process, like forgive others, right? Do not hold resentments. Make amends if you harmed anyone. But I couldn't understand that. I couldn't hear that. First, because I was in the food, and also because I needed a practical program to show me how to apply that into my life. And one last thing, you know, 100 of them had followed successfully. So I had to believe that if it worked for others, it would work for me too. And it did. You know, when I made a decision that whatever I tried did not work and became willing to do what was being presented to me and let go of my old ideas, it worked. You know, it worked. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
And thank you, Renata G. Yes, I'm sure we'll continue this wonderful paragraph tomorrow. And I want to thank everyone who has shared. At this time, please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will do, L, please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Morning, do, L. Recover compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.